Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Thanks for being here with us on this Friday afternoon. Maybe it's a Friday evening where you are, or maybe you are one of the lucky ones that lives on the other side of the international dateline, and it's already Saturday morning for you. You already got your feet up watching Saturday morning cartoons, and you decided, let's listen to Catholic Answers Live. We're glad you're here wherever you are, and we have a good show for you. Second hour, we're going to do Ask a Priest, and Father Keyes will be here. We'll do Ask a Priest, meaning you can ask anything that you might have thought, I wish I had a Catholic priest to ask that of. It could be a pastoral question, a prayer question, a theological question, whatever you like. That's second hour. First hour, we are delighted to have Dr. Matthew Bunsen back with us, the vice president and editorial director of EWTN News. He's a senior fellow at the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology. He teaches church history at the Catholic Distance University, and he's still looking for a fourth part-time job if you've got one available. And we'll do the church in the news today. Dr. Bunsen, thank you for being with us.
Yeah, it's great to be with you as always. I think the last time we talked was during the Synod on Synodality.
Oh, yeah. The legendary. And I'm sure we'll speak again during the Synod on Synodality.
We will, yes.
The number here, if you want to get involved, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. And the Synod on Synodality, actually, since you brought it up, they'll meet again next October. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And you'll be there in Rome personally?
I will be there, yes. Yeah. Exactly as I was the last Synod and the bunch before that, too.
And then, so just so that I know what happens, what I picture in my mind, they finish, they give some sort of document to Pope Francis, and then he writes an apostolic letter or exhortation or something.
Yeah, it's technically called a post-synodal apostolic exhortation, or as somebody once said, it sounds like something you need to take medicine for.
I know, right? Twice a day.
The big question, really, this is a two-part synod, as you know, the work is continuing. We know that coming out of the synod last October, they had an interim report, so to speak, that had not a fair amount of controversy attached to it, let's put it that way. And now there's an expectation that globally, different bishops' conferences are going to be asking some of the questions that emerged out of that interim report. Now, the worry has been that some of this is going back to square one with some of the listening sessions and other things. So there still is, to no one's surprise, a certain haziness about what exactly we're supposed to be doing between the end of this last first session and then the start of the second. We do know that Pope Francis is very invested in this second session, and it's essentially everyone who took part in the first session last October is coming back to Rome take part in this next one.
Oh, that's good. Nobody got fired, but I heard so many different people with different evaluations. I can't remember. I think it might have been Archbishop Chaput, formerly of Philadelphia, who said one thing that he thought was very good at the synod was high church officials sitting with the laity and just talking.
Yes.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did. And in fact, in a number of the prelates and bishops, archbishops, and some cardinals that I know expressed that same thing, that if that is the concept and implementation of synodality on the ground, then it actually worked. And part of that was the way it was designed. All of them sat around these tables, these famous round tables, and then they moved from table to table in order to really make sure that everyone's heard. Now, that brought with it some frustration. First, because I think some of the bishops felt that voices weren't being heard, that they had one chance to speak, basically, throughout the whole month. And so that the not to sound clericalist in any way, but the average layperson who was attending had more time in some cases than some of the highest ranking church leaders who were actually running the synod. It depends on which voices you want to hear. The other area was that, and this I think was something of a surprise to the organizers, just how strong the opposition was to discussion on what we knew going in were going to be a lot of these hot topics. The ordination of women, for example. We know that based on the discussions on the floor and then even in the final report, that topic, a lot of the so-called LGBTQ topics, ordaining the viri pro body, ordaining seasoned men to move from deacons to priests, for example. All of these very controversial topics were confronted, and they were surprised at the levels of opposition, especially because one of the topics that was not supposed to be discussed were these hot button issues. In other words, this was supposed to be an exercise in synodality, and there were a lot of questions asked why these particular topics were raised as they were.
Ah, very interesting. Well, if you need any, you know, I don't know, special correspondence or anything in Rome, I'm happy to come. Just pick up the phone. I'm your man.
Spending weeks and weeks covering a synod.
No, I didn't say I'm going to cover the synod. I'll report on the general atmosphere of the place.
Yes, hence the importance of special correspondence.
Yeah, exactly. Right. More of a food critic role, I think.
Yes.
The number here is 888-318-7884. One thing there's never a shortage of is church news. And probably the biggest topic, and I am somewhat loath to talk about it only because it feels talked out, is that fiducia supplicans. But the Pope had something to say about that today. Maybe you could just review that with us.
He did. Well, I mean, just in the last few days, in fact, in the last week or so, there have been several pretty interesting developments. We can start with today, because we always start with Pope Francis, of course. And he had a meeting, a plenary session with the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith. That is the Vatican department that used to be the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, the famous CDF. Now it's the DDF, headed by the author of Fiducia Supplicans, and that is Cardinal Victor Manuel Fernandez, the recently established or ensconced prefect. And Pope Francis used the opportunity to revisit some of the key points that he was trying to make in Fiducia. And one of them is that this is that separation, that key innovation that Cardinal Fernandez has been talking about from the very beginning with this document, that there has to be a separation between liturgical blessings and pastoral blessings. And Pope Francis made that point again today. And that was even in the clarification from Cardinal Fernandez. We can talk more about that if you want. But the other is coming back to this idea of that blessings of this type, the non-liturgical ones in this setting, are not for, as he put it, the morally perfect. In fact, one of the points that he was trying to make today and reiterating on again, these key themes is that it is for those who present themselves for these blessings. And the way he put it, and I can quote it, is that the intent of the pastoral and spontaneous blessings is to show the closeness of the Lord and the church to all those who, finding themselves, he said, in different situations, ask help to carry on, sometimes to begin a journey of faith. And he again stressed that the blessings come outside any context and form of liturgical character and do not require, as he said, moral perfection to be received, but it's spontaneous. And he said, the union is not blessed, but simply the people who have requested it together. Now, that's an interesting, subtle shift, even from the document itself, which uses the term couples. And if you look in all the different languages that has been published, I've read it in the French, the Italian, the Spanish, and the German. It very clearly uses couples. Here, Pope Francis seems to be shifting the emphasis a little bit for himself on persons rather than even couples. Unions has always been removed from the discussion as something that the church should be able even to recognize, as you know.
888-318-7884. If you've got a question about the church in the news for our guest, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, the editorial director at EWTN News, 888-318-7884. Oh, well, just one more thing then on fiducia supplicans.
Yeah.
And that is, we had a question one day here about it, the tenor of it was kind of like, this wasn't the exact question, but it was the tenor under the undertone was, were the African bishops dissenting from the Pope in their kind of response to the document?
Yeah, actually, it's a great question, and it's a timely one, because in the immediate reaction to Fiducia, we had two very different interpretations of the document. We had first, and very quickly, those who are in secular media and those, I would say, who are in progressive Catholic media, who really went to some lengths to try to interpret this as the church somehow recognizing same-sex unions. Mm-hmm. And we know, of course, that the document does not allow that. It does not foresee it. And it's very clearly stated in the document. So, for example, we have what we could call here a celebrity priest who's well known, who had a spontaneous and simple blessing for a same-sex couple in his apartment in New York. And it just so happened that a reporter and photographer from the New York Times were there to document all of it.
What
of
a course, coincidence.
Immediately,
what a remarkable coincidence.
And then we had another situation that made the rounds that caused the usual uproar in social media of a priest in, I think it was a Lexington diocese, who actually did a blessing, but he was wearing a stole, and it seemed to be in what one was unmistakably looking like a liturgical setting. And so you had that, and that, I think, was part of the reason why we had the clarification issued from Cardinal Fernandez, where he talks about that, this has to be non-liturgical. It has to be simple and spontaneous is the phrase that he keeps coming back to. But then we had bishops all over the world who expressed very serious concerns with this document from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And chief among them were the Africans. And the African bishops themselves, really, again, from the beginning, said that it is almost impossible for them to implement this because of the confusion, bafflement, and even scandal that it could potentially cause among the faithful. And that culturally in Africa, this is simply not possible for them to do. We also had the Eastern Catholic churches, I think the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church in particular, stating that within the code of canons for the Eastern Church, it's not permitted because they don't make that similar differentiation or separation between liturgical and pastoral blessings. Every blessing for them is liturgical. Then, of course, we had the Orthodox weighing in, too, with really the same problem, mm-hmm. That they simply cannot accept this, and they saw fiducia as a real hindrance now to ecumenical dialogue. All of that being said, the one that I think really garnered the most attention were the Africans, because in short order, Episcopal conferences all over Africa began issuing their own statements and declarations, all in agreement with each other. And it culminated with a letter that was issued by the head of essentially the African bishops, the Symposium of Episcopal Conferences of Africa and Madagascar, and that's Cardinal Fridolin Ambongo Basungu, who is himself an appointee by Pope Francis, I think, in 2019. And he issued a letter essentially explaining stressing that they're in full communion with Pope Francis.
Right.
They want to try to implement this, but they simply can't. And there was a fascinating report that came out in a couple of news sites, including a French lay Catholic blog called Le Salon Beige, that he explained what happened. He went to Rome and actually met with Pope Francis, and then with Cardinal Fernandez, drafted the letter that was subsequently published. So clearly, with the full awareness of Pope Francis and Cardinal Fernandez, yeah. The Africans essentially opted out from much of the requirements of fiducia.
But that is not dissent when you go to Rome and write the letter with
that's
the dicastery.
Exactly so. And I think that's one of the big points that the African bishops were trying to make here by stressing again that they're in communion with Pope Francis. They recognize the pastoral value of blessings of those who are in these irregular situations and those that the African bishops are very strong in saying are living in situations of obvious sin, and they cannot bless sin. But then we come to Cardinal Fernandez himself, who, if you remember, now famously issued this clarification of fiducia just about 2 weeks or so after the original document, the declaration, was released, in order to try to answer some of the criticisms, but also to reiterate some of the key points of it. And he said in that clarification that expressing opposition or concern regarding this document is not dissent. And yeah. He said they're not dissenting, in part because his argument, and it's I think a straightforward one, is that there's no new doctrine being espoused in fiducia supplicans. So there's no document, there's no teaching from which to dissent.
Oh, and I see, because dissent refers to doctrine.
Yes.
Yeah.
So his argument is that there's nothing new here. It's an innovation, he said, of how the church looks at blessings. But from the beginning, Cardinal Fernandez has argued that there's no new teaching here, that there's no change in doctrine. So there's nothing in his situation, as far as he's concerned, from which one would dissent. So there have been some comparisons made, for example, to Humanae Vitae. I think it's a false comparison, in part because the opposition and dissent at the time in 1968 and beyond to Humanae Vitae was a dissent from the clarity of church teaching.
Yeah.
In this case, there are those who are expressing concerns that the teaching in Fiducia is not clear enough. So that, I think, we have to be careful about these types of comparisons that are being made. I think if we need an analogy or need to torture the analogies further, I think the closest one would be Amoris Laetitia, where coming out of that document and the famous footnotes regarding possibilities of communion for those who are civilly divorced and civilly remarried and whether or not they can receive communion, we found ourselves in the unfortunate situation of very differing approaches to that question, even in neighboring countries. So, for example, in Germany, they had the widest possible interpretation of the Amoris, whereas in Poland, they have the strictest possible interpretation. I think we're seeing something similar here with Fiducia Supplicans, where the Germans are plowing ahead. We'll see how that plays out with what they expect to be liturgical blessings in opposition to Fiducia. So if we're looking for dissent, there it is. But we also then have the Africans, the Dutch, the most of Eastern Europe. We have a number of bishops in South America, in Central America, and across Asia who are in ardent opposition to this particular document.
Oh, we got to take a break. If you want to talk about the church in the news, whatever the story is, if you want to talk about it with Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Catechism in a Year with me, Father Mike Schmitz, is now available right here on Catholic Radio. Encounter God's plan of sheer goodness for us, revealed in Scripture and passed down through the tradition of the Catholic faith, as we journey together toward our heavenly home.
Bible in a Year and Catechism in a Year with Father Mike Schmitz, tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, talking about the church in the news with Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. And if you don't know, EWTN News covers a lot of news. I mean, we have news on the EWTN network, but you also have, I wouldn't even begin to try to get them all, but the National Catholic Register is in there.
Yes, it is.
Catholic News Agency is under you guys, is that right?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
What else?
We're a multi-platform news entity, and that includes television. We have radio shows, and then we have a pretty massive digital presence, of course.
Right.
We have 13 different language agencies.
Oh wow!
Spread around the globe. So, just to name a few, we have ASI Prensa in Spanish, ACI Stampa in Italian. We have ACI Africa, which I think is doing really important work for us in Africa. We also have Asimina, which means sort of the news agency for the Middle East and North Africa, which is based in Iraq and covers, as you can imagine, the whole of the Near East and much of the Middle East. And then we have Asi Digital, which is in Portuguese. We've got the CNA Deutsch. Then we have, of course, the National Catholic Register, which is sort of the standard bearer for deeper dives news coverage, which is still published. And it's one of the rarest.
I know you can get it animals. Delivered to your house.
Yes, you can. It's long been one of the rare animals in modern Catholic media. Because our subscriptions have actually gone up over the years.
That's
at a time when everyone
miracle.
Else is collapsing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we have billions of impressions on our news sites. And then that doesn't even count our news programming,
right.
Which includes EWTN News Nightly, EWTN News In Depth, The World Over with Raymond Arroyo, and Pro Life Weekly.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, and Noticias, which is like the ENN or News Nightly in Espanol.
Well, one of the great services that you do, I mean, and there's many contributions I think the Catholic news can make, including covering whole areas of the culture that will be ignored by mass media. But one of the services you do is reporting on those places where the Catholic community itself is persecuted.
And
can we just talk about a few of those places?
I'm so happy that you want to talk about this because it is probably the most underreported story that you'll find anywhere. And every day, for those of us who pay attention to it, you can read about deaths and persecutions and massacres. I'm thinking especially in recent days, in recent years, in a country like Nigeria in sub-Saharan Africa, where tens of thousands of Christians, of Catholics, have died at the hands of Islamic extremists, in particular groups like Boko Haram, Fulani herdsmen, and others, and then bandit groups. And it is a war that is being waged right now on Christianity around the world. And as we speak, somewhere in the neighborhood of 400 million Christians around the world are facing some form of persecution. That means social, legal disabilities. That means that when you wake up in the morning and you're a Christian in some of these countries, there's a very good chance that during the day you will face discrimination, violence, and even death. And that's the daily reality for Christians around the world.
And, you know, I think it would not to guilt people, because there are resources. Like, you could just get the National Catholic Register, or maybe make it a daily habit to get the emails from the National Catholic Register, and you will be kept abreast of these things. You're not going to get it from the alphabet soup of TV and, cable networks.
That's right. Yeah, that's absolutely right. And it's why one of the big roles for the Catholic press is covering the global reality of Catholicism. And, you know, Pope Francis talks a lot about the periphería, the peripheries. And we see one of our most important jobs is covering these stories of Christian persecution around the world, because no one else is.
Yeah, well, then let's talk, if we could, for a minute about Nicaragua, because just the seizure of properties, the imprisoning of bishops, a whole university just taken from by the government there, by the communist government of Nicaragua.
The list of actions by the Ortega regime, and we use the term regime now because that's really what it is. It is, for those of us who are getting older, we can remember in the late 70s and then into the 80s, the Sandinista regime that toppled the old, I think it was the Somoza regime in Nicaragua, and tried to install a Marxist regime that was supposed to be one of the gateways for the Soviet Empire into the Western Hemisphere in a way that Cuba couldn't. And eventually that fell, especially once the Soviet Union collapsed. But the name that was always hovering around was Daniel Ortega. And he managed to get himself elected president of Nicaragua and moved very quickly, as various people warned he would, because once a Marxist dictator, you're always going to be one, to seize control of the levers of power, the levers of government, and then to begin ruthlessly suppressing all forms of human and civil rights in Nicaragua. His primary opponent, because the political reality was that he was able to shut down much of the opposition, was the Catholic Church. And I think in particular of Bishop Rolando Alvarez, who became really enemy number one for the Ortega regime. He was arrested, imprisoned in the worst prison in the whole of Latin America. Subsequently, eventually released into the hands of the Vatican. But that was just the tip of the iceberg of terrible behavior on the part of Nicaragua.
You can hear the music. We'd love your calls, 888-318-7884. We'll talk a bit more about Nicaragua, about the great story that you don't hear. I don't mean great in a good sense. The big story of persecution of Catholics around the world will continue. 888-318-7884 is the number.
Why We're Catholic is the one book you can hand to anyone to invite them into or back to the Catholic faith. With more than 400,000 copies sold, Trent Horn's book has had a number one ranking on Amazon.com for 5 years running. Now available in softcover, book cases, ebook, and on Audible. Find out what the excitement is all about. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic at shop.catholic.com or visit whywearecatholic.com.
When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Are you scared to talk about abortion? Don't worry, almost everyone is. You can overcome this fear, as Trent Horn shows in the newly revised and expanded second edition of Persuasive Pro-Life. With a little knowledge and a few proven techniques, you can become a bold and effective apologist for life. Visit shop.catholic.com to order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life and never again be afraid to speak up. Also available at good Catholic bookstores. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Dr. Matthew Bunsen is our guest. Your calls are welcome regarding the church in the news. He's the guy to talk to. He's the vice president and editorial director of EWTN News, many of the outlets of which we mentioned in the last segment, but it's big. And one of the great things about that, Dr. Bunsen, is reporting is just not what news services do anymore. You get a lot of opinion. Right. Cable news used to be 24-hour news. Now, now it's, you know, 5 minutes an hour you get of news. The rest of it is now we go to the panel and the panel all has the same opinion. And then we go to another panel and you all don't do that. You do
it's uniformly the same.
It's hard work to report the news and you all do that hard work.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. Over the last 10 years, especially, I'm based here in Washington, D.C. We have our offices in D.C., right on Capitol Hill. And to be able to have, I've referred to it for many, many years as a beachhead in the political and media culture in the world today. I mean, you could establish yourselves in New York if you wanted, but this is obviously the political capital of the United States. And that means that we also have reporters up on Capitol Hill. We have Eric Rosales, for example, for News Nightly. He's our Capitol Hill correspondent. We have Owen Jensen, who's at the White House. We have a variety of reporters from the Catholic News Agency and the National Catholic Register roaming the halls of Congress on a daily basis, and then going to the State Department, the Defense Department, the Pentagon, and then we've got all of the reporters around the world. So we're pretty uniquely positioned, certainly within Catholic media today, to be able to cover stories literally all over the globe. And that means something.
It sure does. Let me ask you about one other hotspot in the globe. I mean, the thing with Nicaragua is there just seems to be no outrage about it at all in among the chattering classes. I mean, outrage is the way you get things done now. And nobody seems to be at all concerned that the Catholic Church is under obvious, unjust, and brutal attack in Nicaragua.
Well, a good example, a name that we don't hear that much now, but ISIS. And if you remember how long it took for the State Department, for example, and I'm not dumping on the U.S. State Department, to go ahead and formulate the accusations of genocide on the part of ISIS, where the persecution of the Christians in Iraq and the Yazidi minorities as well. And that took an immense amount of media pressure and political pressure to actually get some kind of a formal statement. And in similar ways, we've seen a lot of foot dragging in where Nicaragua is concerned, in part because there just isn't a lot of interest in that.
No.
The focus of secular media is elsewhere. Now, are there a lot of major stories to be covering? We have several wars taking place right now that any one of them could spill into World War III. So that is something. We have the global phenomenon of mass migration, anyone who's been to the southern border, but it's not just the southern border, as much of a crisis as that seems to be. But we're seeing millions wandering around the world at any given moment, trying to find a new place for safety because of all of this political upheaval. So the secular media would say, well, there's just too much else going on for us to cover all of this in depth. But that doesn't mean that these stories shouldn't be covered and need to be covered.
Right. They should. And I do think it frustrates some people that, you know, there are certain subgroups, particularly what might be referred to as sexual minorities, that if one person got oppressed in Nicaragua, it would be world news. But you can take the property of and jail the priests and bishops of the Catholic Church, and it's not news. So you would have time if you cared. That's the way it feels, I think, to Catholics.
Well, that's right. In any news organization, any news entity, you have gatekeeping.
Yeah, right.
It is a decision of what you choose to cover. And it is very clear that the secular media, and I would add to that most of progressive Catholic media, has a very different set of concerns than would probably be of the primary worry of a Catholic now in Nicaragua, a Catholic in Nigeria, in China, in Pakistan, in Venezuela, and elsewhere.
So how about China? We'll just get a word on China before we move on to another story. But we're talking about the Church in the News with Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. Your calls welcome, 888-318-7884. What's the status of Catholic life in China?
Yeah, well, it's part of it, the reality is it depends on which province you're in. The persecution of the Church varies significantly from province to province. There are some that are much more aggressive. Overall, the situation is dire on two different fronts. We have the very clear effort on the part of Premier Xi Jinping to implement what he is calling the sinicization of all religion in China, to make it truly beholden to the state. That means, for example, even going so far as to rewrite the Ten Commandments, to make it literally illegal for people who are under the age of 18 to enter a church. He's done very similar efforts at control with the Muslim minorities, the Uyghurs, for example, who are, for the most part, in various concentration camps now. But then we have the added complication of the Vatican-China deal on what was the goal of it, and it has been renewed temporarily a couple of times, to try to regularize the life of the church there, in particular in the area of the appointment of bishops. We just saw the appointment of the first bishop in a particular diocese in China for the first time, I think, in 70 years. And we are seeing some significant discussion, again for the first time, between church leaders in China and the Beijing regime. I think, for example, of it's Cardinal Chow, who's in Hong Kong, who made a trip to Beijing, something that really would have been almost unimaginable just a few years ago. Controversial as this agreement has been and violated repeatedly by the Chinese government, we are seeing at least some appointments that are going through in a way that at least gives some prospect for long-term cooperation.
Again, 888-318-7884. All right, so it's not all bad news. The news of the church around the world is not all bad news. So I am going to get to callers, but I want to ask you, because you prompted me with the, and I don't know about this. What are we getting as far as statistics about religious sisters and brothers? What's coming out on that?
Yeah, well, so this is one of the, we were talking about some good news, and every year we get these various reports on what is happening around the world in terms of men and women religious. And one of the things that I thought was really quite compelling was a series of new reports about what they all have in common. And there's a great article, in fact, that was just posted by Joe Bakuris from the Catholic News Agency, based on the most recent statistics from, this is a name that pops up, I know, from time to time here, Georgetown University Center for Applied Research in the Apostolate, or CARA. Mm-hmm. And what they're finding is that it polled 101 religious in the U.S. Who professed their vows in 2023. 48 religious brothers and priests and 53 religious sisters were surveyed. What they found is the vast, vast majority had one thing in common, and that is they came from stable two-parent families.
Oh.
And, yeah, it's really quite compelling because it's a barometer of a lot of other things that bleeds even into a discussion about where the nuns, N-O-N-E-S's, are now. But what it found is that 90% of respondents said that they were raised by their biological parents during at least the most formative parts of their childhood. 88% said they were raised by a married couple living together during their formative years. Only 5% were raised by one parent who is divorced or separated. So what we're seeing is that the stability of family life is very crucial to the faith formation, which we knew, but also as a possible predictor or an incubator, so to speak, a cradle for the listening to vocations. You know, I think one of the real concerns that those of us who track all of this or try to is that how many young men had vocations to the priesthood, but no one ever asked them. Or they lived in an environment that simply didn't foster the idea of a vocation for whatever reason. So family life is very important. It's why we have to have such a strong focus and emphasis on the nuclear family, the traditional family, but authentic, faithful families.
Boy, isn't that something? It gives you a sense of that it's the answer is a holistic answer. It's a healthy community that's going to produce healthy numbers of vocations.
Yes, yeah. And that means that you also need to have parishes that are promoting vocations and doing everything they can to strengthen family life. But it also comes with a sober recognition that if we're going to be fostering these vocations, what do we need to do in recognizing the collapse of the traditional family and so many of the stresses and challenges that single parents face, that families of divorce face? You know, it's easy then to simply dismiss them as they're unhealthy or that they're not doing their job in fostering vocations, when in fact the heroic work, for example, that single moms do and single fathers do every day in trying to raise their kids in the faith, I think is truly commendable. But it's a stark reminder then that we've got to provide them with the resources that they need and the help they need.
Amen.
In these pastoral situations.
Right, right. That our social policy has to be about family.
Which is why the USCCB just, I think it was just 2 days ago or so, issued Archbishop Boris Gudziak, who's in charge of the Committee for Domestic Policy for the USCCB, commended. And this is a word that you don't hear much these days, and that's bipartisan progress on a family tax credit bill making its way through Congress that could actually benefit families and lift a lot of families, especially poor children, out of poverty. So it's little things like this that we can do. Public policy has great significance, as we're seeing.
Yep.
If you have a government administration that really focuses on a very different agenda from the one, for example, that might be advanced by Catholic social teaching, that raises all sorts of challenges. And it's a statement of fact that every different administration is going to have disagreements with Catholic teaching in one fashion or another. The question is, how do we build those bridges of cooperation?
888-318-7884. I said I'd go to callers. Let's start with Tom in Nebraska, Omaha, Nebraska, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio. Tom, go ahead with your guest for, with your question for our guest, Dr. Matthew Bunsen.
Okay, here's what it is. Thanks for taking my call first. Do you think that one of the reasons that these places around the world are persecuting Catholics, killing them and so forth, and for the American press right here in the United States, that they actually like that? The media and so on, they aren't so upset about that. If the Catholic Church is being destroyed, fine with them. They don't care.
Okay, Tom.
As evidenced in even American papers where they never say anything good about Catholics, but they'll say every lie and half-truth and everything that they can. Okay, so what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's been made very clear that there are a number of, if not the majority of members of the secular media, and I'm not going to sit attacking the secular media here, but they hold positions in many different ways that are diametrically opposed to what the church has traditionally taught and continues to teach around the world. For example, the church's opposition to same-sex marriage, for example, is something I think also of the church's very clear opposition to abortion are things that the vast majority of secular news outlets today, and this goes from the major entities such as the New York Times and the Washington Post, all the way down to what we see even on local television stations, that they are clearly in favor of abortion. And that, one way or another, tends to be reflected in their coverage. And so, as you and I were talking, Cy, the lack of interest then is just an absence of curiosity as to what is happening to Christians around the world. As we were saying, that in terms of journalistic gatekeeping, they make these choices. And I've sat in on a number of editorial discussions in very prominent news organizations over the decades. And they do indeed set editorial priorities, not just on a daily, but a weekly, monthly, and even yearly basis. So this is something that's important to them, and it places them, I should say correctly, places us in opposition to what they see are certain accepted realities and journalistic positions.
Tom, thank you for the call and for the question. I have to take a quick break. The folks who are on the phone, hang on. We're going to get right back to you when we come back. Dr. Matthew Bunsen is our guest. We're talking about the church in the news with the vice president and editorial director of EWTN News. More of that right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
EWTN Radio is seeking a dynamic radio producer to join the EWTN Radio team in Irondale, Alabama. The right candidate will be a passionate, multi-skilled, talented professional who can manage and direct all aspects of producing world-class radio broadcasts and play an integral part in Mother Angelica's mission. For all the details about this exciting opportunity, visit EWTN.com and click on Employment at the bottom of the page.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. 888-318-7884 is our number. Next hour, Father Keyes will be here, and we will do Ask a Priest. We'll end the work week with Ask a Priest. If there's a question you've been wanting to ask a Catholic priest about your prayer life, your family life, sacramental life, or maybe a theological or moral question, they're all welcome next hour. This hour, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, our guest, we're talking about the church in the news. 888-318-7884. I go now to Boise, Idaho. Kathleen is in Boise, Idaho, listening on the Salt and Light Radio Network. Glad to have you, Kathleen. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Bunsen.
Thank you. I was watching the Archbishop of Ohio on the Pro-Life, and one of the things, I'm sorry, I'm kind of going on, but what he said was we put our eggs in the political basket. I had an idea. And Matthew Bunsen was talking about Nigeria and not being said. What if the USSB, the bishops, called for this land for us to pray and fast for Nigeria? Step over the administration to say they're whatever. God will take care of that. So maybe if we do our best, Jesus will take care of the rest.
Kathleen, interesting that you paired that with the idea that we put all our eggs in the political basket, because that I see what you're saying is why not have a kind of spiritual response primarily, and because we're Catholic, we're not just a political organization. Is that where you're going with that, Kathleen?
Correct.
All right, Dr. Bunsen.
Yeah. I think it's a very good idea, and we can even broaden it out that we need to be praying and fasting and remembering the Christians, the Catholics who are being persecuted all over the world. And I think Nigeria is a particular case in point because of its strategic importance. You know, not to say that suffering of Christians is more important in one place than another. But the reality is that there is a genuine spiritual and religious and political struggle happening in sub-Saharan Africa, with pressures coming down from the north because of radical Islam. You have a government in Nigeria that is pretty openly biased toward the Islamic radicals. It is essentially an Islamic government. And in that sense, then, the more that we can do to make people aware of it, the better. I would note that in 2023, so just last year, the U.S. bishops used Religious Freedom Week back in June to highlight the problems of religious freedom in Nigeria. And it included things like prayer and reflection. And the prayers, what I thought, I remember it very vividly, so I looked it up very quickly. It says, pray that herders and farmers in Nigeria whose conflict over access to land and resources has fueled religious tensions, we're talking about for the most part, the Fulani herdsmen, may find the means to compromise and work out their differences in a nonviolent manner. And so the bishops asked us all to reflect, but then they actually asked us to act, which support aid to the church in need, Catholic Relief Services, the USCCB Solidarity Fund for Aid to the Church in Africa, and other organizations that are helping. So, and that was on one of the days of Religious Freedom Week. So the bishops are very aware of the situation in Nigeria. If for no other reason, one of the other things that we want to highlight is that the number of priests who now are coming to the West, the United States, Canada, and Europe, from African countries, it was long ago, prediction was made by Cardinal, I think it was Laurian Ragumba, who was one of the first of the modern African cardinals in the College of Cardinals, predicted that the re-evangelization of the West would inevitably come from Africa. So it's in our interest to do everything that we can, not just to grow and promote the faith, which we're all called to do, but also then to help the church in Africa to grow, to be healthy, to be strong, because it is really one of the engines now that is driving global Catholicism.
Kathleen, thank you for the wonderful idea and for the call. Appreciate it. I'm going to try to get everybody on if I can with Dr. Bunsen before we have to go. We're talking about the church in the news. Steve in Napomo, California is next, watching on YouTube. Welcome back, Steve. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Bunsen.
No, thank you, Si. I just wanted to let you guys know how much I appreciate what EWTN has done for a non-Catholic man, helping me study my way into the church. I watch your nightly news, I watch the world over, and I watch all of your programs. I don't watch any other news. I only watch you and Catholic Answers, and my wife, who is a Catholic, took care of that and made sure that we're support both of your organizations. I love what you're doing. Here's a man in Central Coast, California, who loves it, a non-Catholic, who's studying his way and appreciates everything you've done. God bless y'all.
Well, thank you. And we'll pray for you as you continue your journey, hopefully into the church. So I appreciate the comment. And it's comments like that, too, that remind us just how important the work that we're doing, but how faithful we have to be as we do it.
Steve, thank you. You're always so generous to us. And I do think one of the great things about EWTN is that serendipitous thing that happens when people find you by accident all the time. You know, what is this? Yeah. Who are these people? What are they talking about? Why do they have a news show? What's this about?
Well, they're the famous stories of people who are scrolling through their televisions and happened upon this nun who was talking to them straight into the camera and found her absolutely riveting. And sure enough, it was Mother Angelica. And these people had stumbled on EWTN, and it was a life-changing moment when they first started to hear her.
Yeah. And she had that, there was just that charisma that she had, accompanied by humor. I often think that is an underestimated quality of that. Her good humor, I think, attracted many people, which we could all learn from. We're all so fussy and angry now, and I include myself in that. Like, okay, every now and then, maybe a little honey, not all vinegar.
Yes. Yeah. Humor, we have lost in some ways our ability to laugh.
Yeah.
And we've really lost an ability to laugh at ourselves.
So anything else big coming this year besides the Synod? Is the Synod the big story for the year in the Catholic Church? No, there's the Eucharistic Congress coming up, huh?
We have a couple of major events coming in 2024. First, obviously, the presidential election.
We got
huge
that.
Huge federal elections. Yeah, know that. As though we're going to be allowed to forget that.
Right.
And we've got the Synod, but then we also have, you're right, the Eucharistic Congress, the part of the Eucharistic Revival that's going to be in Indianapolis, I think, in July. And then we also have the International Eucharistic Congress that's going to be held in Quito, Ecuador. And
that's a tough place to have a Congress right now, isn't it?
Well, I remember when the announcement was made. I was in Budapest covering the last International Eucharistic Congress, and the announcement was made that it was going to be in Quito. And there were some raised eyebrows. But again, it makes sense. So the Eucharistic Congress has been all over the world, so why not hold it in Quito, Ecuador? And so right now, it looks like I'll be going. So perhaps
we'll pray for you.
Perhaps we can do a show from Quito, Ecuador.
Notice I didn't ask you to make me the special correspondent.
You might
make a note of that. Will you all do like a bit? I mean, I can't imagine the Indiana thing. EWTN is pretty much going to move to Indiana for that, aren't you? I mean, you're going to have a big studio set up there and all that?
Yeah, we're very active in terms of this Eucharistic Congress. So look in the months that are coming for the heavy, heavy coverage that we're going to be doing there. It's an important moment for the U.S. Church, and it's an important moment for U.S. Catholics and for all citizens.
Yeah, indeed. And the thing about a Eucharistic Congress is Jesus is coming. And the consequences of that, some of the congresses that have happened in the history of this country I have had
1926 in Chicago comes to mind.
Right, and it just had multiplying effects out through the Catholic community in America. So pray for it, pray for it. Dr. Matthew Bunsen
is just getting out of Jesus' way.
That's right. Well, I'm not so good at that. I mean, you had to point to that one, right? But yeah, get out of his way and let him do his work. I hope we'll see you there in Indiana. I plan on being with you in Rome in October, and thank you for a very fine hour. Appreciate it.
Oh, great. Great to be with you always, anytime.
Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. We'll be right back with Ask a Priest on Catholic Answers Live.